Skyline's new chicken chili is here. Now you can enjoy that legendary Skyline taste with a new protein option. Try Skyline's chicken chili on Waze, Coney's, and all your Skyline favorites. Feeling good. It's Skyline time.
All right, now let's go to the gambling guru of the universe, one of our favorite guys. We saved the best guest for last today, as we often do on Fridays. Well, we always do on Fridays. He's also a genius of a businessman and a good friend, RJ Bell. What's going on, RJ?
Hey, Freddie, how you feeling?
I'm feeling okay.
I tell you, well, AJ and I tore it down all night long.
Yeah, RJ at the beginning of the night is like, yeah, I don't drink. And then I'd say maybe six drinks later, RJ's like kind of semi-dancing at the bar. I mean, he was having a good time. And RJ drinks he drinks blueberry vodka. So yeah. He's a fancy.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun, but you guys were too much for me, man.
Fred went upstairs. There was a dragnet marathon. He had to get up for that.
That's right. Fred couldn't hang. Fred had one drink and he was gone.
No, I had two.
Now here's the one story that you need to know as a listener about AJ. So he's, you know, AJ's, what are you, AJ? Like 6'3"?
6'3".
Yeah, exactly. And he's sitting there and he's getting drunk himself. But for him, it's almost like he's got to double up. Like I drink a drink. Everyone else drinks a drink. AJ has a drink, but he has a shot just right before he drinks. So he effectively just drinks double everyone else just to catch a buzz. Is that fair to say?
I don't know if that's true, but I do. I mean, we're in Vegas, RJ. You live out there. I'm away from my wife and kids. I'm trying to live that life. You know it, RJ.
All right. Well, so here's what happens. One of my main guys from Ohio, I grew up with him. He's worked for me for 10-plus years, was one of the three guys in my wedding. He's sitting there, small-town guy, you know. He was born in a small town. And at one point, AJ leans over to him and says, "Here's the thing you got to know. I could kill you with my bare hands."
That's true. Because he was talking about killing me.
That's all you need to know.
And he's a small guy.
And then he bought a round of shots. RJ peer pressured him to a round. And he brought me the same fruity, girly drink that RJ was drinking. And what was I going to do? Not drink it? So I drank it.
Let's get something straight. Blackberry vodka is not girly. It's manly.
That is not manly, RJ. I'm sorry. I hate to
break
it.
Well, at least at minimum, you've got to be a man to drink it.
That's fair.
And not get beat up.
That's fair, yeah. RJ, just so you know, we told the news yesterday on the show that that Brad and I are going to start up a college basketball podcast next week. So we'll appreciate the opportunity for that, and we're excited to start doing that.
I got to be honest with you. I think it's going to be great. And, you know, Fred, who's now like a super executive, we're just hoping. I think, one, just as a podcast, it's going to be great. But I think there's other opportunities. So we're very excited. And I'll be candid with you. I usually grade radio guys by, hey, you're pretty sharp for a radio guy. You know, Colin Cowherd's a great example of that. I think he's mighty sharp for a radio guy. You two, when you specialize in a sport, horse racing, NFL, whatever it is, you guys are right there as, you know, pro-level handicaps. Now, you don't put the every hour in it like the pros do, so there might be a hole here or there. But, boy, you've got 96% of the info. And to me, having a full-time pro on the pod means it's peer review. He might say five things a month that doesn't make sense. You call him on it. You say five things, he calls you. The idea that Brad and AJ, both of them, is going to make a mistake on the same thing, boy, that's a long shot. So I think this is going to be bulletproof college basketball info.
Yeah, just as a fan of both of those guys, I can tell you it's a lot of fun doing that segment with Brad on Thursdays. I just sit back and let them go at it because their knowledge of college basketball is through the roof. So more of that is a good thing.
Now, will AJ threaten Brad physically if there's a disagreement?
Of course not. That only happens when I'm drinking, RJ.
Okay. But yeah, we are recording these Sunday night, so who knows?
That only happens when I'm drinking. Hey, RJ, we talked about this yesterday at some point, and I don't know what the number is currently, but at one point yesterday, it was 82% of the bets had on the side bets had come in on the Patriots, and 85% of the money, which would be far and away a record. I'm assuming that once it got to that, it's come down a little bit. But what I did notice was that the books are still hesitant to give a three. Are you surprised at how much action has come in on the Patriots and the number hasn't reached three yet?
So you're quoting those numbers. If you go to pregame.com, click the game center, and then in the consensus tab, you can see the bet splits, both number of bets and cash. And only place on the internet, the cash numbers are free. And I'm a little – this is a sophisticated topic. Because on one hand, I would say, well, wait a minute. Who is betting right now? So in any given game, you can ask the question, who's betting? So let's say Portland State is playing on a Tuesday night, 10:30 Eastern start. Who's betting that game? College basketball. Professionals,
right.
and perhaps the parents of the kids, right? And the Super Bowl is the other extreme. There's people who are betting the only time all year on the Super Bowl, only football game. And others who bet every week's betting double, triple as much because it's the Super Bowl. Not that you should do that, but that's what people tend to do. Okay. But who's betting early in the week? Is Freddie Fanny Pack, the recreational guy, is he betting 10 days, 12 days before the Super Bowl? Most of the time, not. So on one hand, I could totally get, hey, Belichick, Brady, they're so well known. This is the most recreational game. It makes sense, right? But I think what's happening here, because the money is being bet by the pros or the quasi-pros right now, is that anyone that likes the Pats early said, well, it's not getting better than this. I'm going to get down now. And anyone that likes the Rams is waiting. And to me, guys, it's the best advice I could give. And I very rarely am like really adamant, like pounding my fist. But that's what I'm going to do here, metaphorically, pound my fist. If you like the Patriots, bet them now. Here's why. We believe there's a better chance it goes to three than two, right? Right now it's 2.5. That's not even the issue. The issue is, what do you gain if it goes to two, minus two, and what do you lose if it goes to three? Well, if it goes to three, you lose the most key number in the NFL, three. If it goes to two, you lose one of the least key numbers in the NFL. You could say that three is worth five times as much. So imagine a situation that there's a 50-50 type bet you could make, but if you win five times as much, or if you lose five times as much. Well, you're not going to want that bet, right, if it's the losing side. So why bet this line's going to move? Because you're risking five times as much value if it goes to three if you like the Pats. So unequivocally, no nuance. If you like the Pats, lay the 2.5 now. Flip side, same amount of adamance. If you like the Rams, wait. Because what are you risking? Oh, plus 2.5 goes to plus two? Who cares?
Well, it doesn't matter.
It matters,
right.
But it barely matters. If it goes to three, you gain the most valuable number. Rams plus three is such a better bet. And if it doesn't move at all, it doesn't make a difference. The first three you see, minus 110, grab it. Because it's not getting better than that. 95% chance it doesn't get better than that. So it doesn't even have to go to three everywhere. It doesn't have to close three. It's only got to go to three for enough time for you to bet it. If you get it with the Rams, gobble it up.
Well, that's what I'm waiting for. I want the Rams plus three. If not, I don't know if I'm even going to bet the Super Bowl if I don't get that three. So for me, that's basically what it boils down to. I'm waiting for that number because, like I said, I think last week, I think we were both maybe surprised that this – line is going to get outside of 1 point because I thought that we'd almost be for sure at a pick'em for the Super Bowl, but apparently people think otherwise, and the Patriots are going to end up being a decent favorite here.
Well, but I think it's justified, right? Because the Pats looked a lot better than the Rams did. On the surface, you could make the case, hey, they both went on the road in overtime as small underdogs. That seems about as apples to apples as you can get. But I'd make the case, if you look at the stats, the Patriots dominated. You look at the Rams game, boy, that was a true coin flip. And then if you jump in with the no call and NOLA, well, I mean, at that point, if that call was made, which it is a vast majority of the time, I mean, the Saints are 90-plus percent to win that game. So doesn't mean the Rams don't, you know, all it means is the Rams won a coin flip at best. Patriots dominated. And looking at Breeze, I think a big chunk of the reason the Rams won is Breeze was not the same quarterback. We were debating it. I mean, there was a pass before that pass interference. If he would have just made the pass, they probably either would have scored or would have got the first down. I mean, 95% of the time in Drew Brees' career, if you would have had a time machine and could just teleport any Drew Brees from the past, almost every one of them would have won that game for the Saints. It's just the current version at the end of this long season, I think physically Drew Brees is hobbled, especially his arm strength.
RJ Bell is our guest. RJ, do you get – I'm actually depressed because I'm now down to knowing that there's only one game left. Is that something at the end of the year where you're kind of like, okay – is it a letdown or is it a relief that you actually get a break from having to do NFL?
I'll be honest with you, and this hopefully this shows that I try to be truthful even when it doesn't necessarily come across super, oh, he's Mr. Vegas kind of thing. The voice of Vegas, as some say, is I have so many responsibilities business-wise. Technology type, you know, development and fundraising and all the different things we're doing and a full-time radio or, you know, a five-day-a-week radio show now is the idea that I can have these 6 months to try to make some like all I can do during NFL is just get the basics done, right? Literally Thursday night I'm finishing up my handicapping. Friday I'm doing all the hits and everything. Saturday the hits. Sunday, I watch the games, and literally, you know, 2 hours after the games are over, I got to worry about doing it all over again. Now, listen, it's a fun job relative to a lot of jobs, but it is a grind. The idea that I can work just as hard but make progress in other things, I like. So, now that said, I get antsy, you know, after a few months, I wouldn't mind. But listen, March Madness is fun. You know, I love the NBA. I'm an NBA guy more than I think. Well, obviously, it's a popular sport. But I love the playoffs. Because to me, regular season, I love the big games, the big TV games, because, you know, the players care. The only thing about the NBA that anyone would say is, oh, the effort level ebbs and flows. But when they're trying hard, man, it's as good as anything. Guys, if you don't mind, I sincerely consider you two very bright guys. Let me ask you a question. We were talking about this on Straight Out of Vegas. Is Todd Gurley, during the regular season, up until the point where he got banged up, he was averaging about 98 yards rushing per game. And his over-under yardage on a typical game was right in that range, 98 yards. Okay. He got hurt. He was hobbled. He missed games. He was on injury list. All kind of things that made you think there's a physical problem. Okay. Coming in the playoffs, the Cowboys week, not even on the injury report later in the week. Removed. Literally saying to the world, the Rams, Gurley is 100% physically. He gets 100 yards plus against Dallas, but on not as many carries as you think. And it was weird that C.J. Anderson got all those carries. But then it's like, well, maybe they're protecting him. Maybe they didn't need to give him those carries because they were dominating the game in a way. You know, you could make a lot of excuses. But then in the biggest game of the year that was a true coin flip against the Saints, if you would have taken Gurley's jersey off and put another number on him, so a blind resume, and watched that game, you would say, who's that kid from the practice squad? When's he going to get cut? So there's only two possibilities. Here's my question. One, there's a physical injury and the Rams are being deceiving the world about it. Number two, there's some issue other than physical, mental, emotional, who knows what. Some, you know, tragedy in the family no one knows about. You know, who knows? I don't know. I'm not saying any of that's true. But then that would explain, if we heard that, like, both of Gurley's parents were diagnosed with cancer in the same day, we would all kind of go, oh, okay, it makes sense now. So here's my question. Why isn't anyone talking about that one of the five most valuable non-quarterbacks in the NFL, some would say the most valuable Ram, the fact he's playing so differently than he has, and they're saying there's no injury. And let me objectively tell you how differently he plays right now, or is playing. 98 yards was the typical over-under. In Vegas yesterday, they opened up the over-under for Gurley rushing at 68 yards. And it was bet down, 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 under to 60. So the typical number, wow, 98, now it's 60. And apparently there's no injury. What is it, and why ain't we talking about it?
You know, I don't know what it is. I will say I don't know that I think he's hurt. I just think that he happened to play the worst game I've ever seen him play. And the time that he looked bad before that, at least late in the season, was against the Bears. And the Bears have made a lot of guys look bad, and that was just sort of a game flow thing. Nothing was going right for the Rams. They couldn't figure anything out passing or running the ball.
Here's the thing, AJ. If he would have carried the ball 26 times and got 52 yards, you could have said, oh, bad game. Who knows? But he hardly played. He hardly touched the ball. Right? What was it, four carries?
Are you talking about in the Cowboys game or in the Saints game?
Saints game.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, he did hardly touch. I think he had, he got his hands on the ball five times total.
And Matt, if LeBron James in a conference finals was not injured and he played for 7 minutes, it would be all anyone could talk about. What's going on, right? Isn't that analogous to Gurley getting five touches in the biggest game of the year? And if he's not injured, what the heck is going on?
It was definitely odd. And I thought, I mean, from what I understood, what he said, and which may be obviously deceitful, is he said he was benched for performance. He was playing horribly, and C.J. Anderson was the better option in that game.
The guy that was on the couch 6 weeks ago.
I'm with you. Typically, to go to that second option when you've got a player of the caliber of Gurley, I would want to see more than four.
Tell me the last time one of the top five running backs in the NFL was benched after five touches in a big game.
I don't know that this ever happened.
Here's my final word on this.
I love that RJ brings his own sound.
Yeah.
Let's get the answer. I'm going to go to Atlanta and get the answer, guy. You guys relax in Houston.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I do think it should be talked about more. And I do think he's hurt. He has to be hurt. And seeing him bike on the sideline.
But he didn't look hurt against the Cowboys.
But he could have gotten hurt late in that game. But he did not look right. And if you're not going to use him at all, then, I there had to be something wrong.
And here's my last comment on him being hurt. And it's really a powerful or interesting point, I think, at minimum. SEC, stock investing. Like Elon Musk tweets out, hey, and again, I'm paraphrasing, I'm not sure verbatim. Hey, we might go private. I've got the funding. That's all he said. And that kind of quote-unquote deception or possible deception, it's been a big deal. Who knows, millions of dollars, fines, etc. Now, how much money was bet on that Saints game, right? Probably over $1 billion worldwide. Millions and millions, tens of millions of that was legal. If the injury report is there for one reason, it's for gamblers. The NFL decided a long time ago, if everyone knows everything, there is no inside information. If they're lying now in the age of legalized gambling and someone bets a lot of money based on that injury report and that injury report's a deception, isn't that legitimately something you can sue for? Like Enron deceived.
It's just going to be tough to prove at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And that's always the
except,
case.
Except all you do – listen, this isn't some Deadspin doing some fake analysis or fake investigation. This is literally you go up on the stand in a court and ask the trainer, hey, trainer, were you doing anything special because of Gurley being less than 100% last week or that the week of? Well, he's either going to perjure himself or he's going to say, oh, yeah, his blank and blank was a problem and we did this and this. Well, so I think it's easy to prove.
How often does Tom Brady show up on the injury report as questionable, and is he really ever questionable to play?
And that's my point. I think that the NFL and the coaches have had a back and forth because that all started because one time Brady wasn't on the report a long time ago, and Belichick got in trouble for that. So he says, all right, I'll put him on every week. But now that there's more – everyone always looked at Vegas as the cousin that never comes home for Thanksgiving, so you could kind of not talk about him. Now that legalization's everywhere, I think these fiduciary responsibility issues are going to rear themselves in a very interesting and impactful way. And I would suggest mark the tape, and a year or two from now we'll pull it up and celebrate my prediction. And I guess I'll just say one more thing for my soundboard about my prediction.
Do you know how some people get premonitions? I'm one of them.
I get premonitions.
Oh, well, thank goodness it wasn't Stephen A. this time. But, you know, that is a topic that we're going to be able to spend a lot more time on over the next few months because it is a changing environment, and it's creating a lot of things that I think and I do think that there's going to be some kind of retribution at some point for some of the things that go on with the injury report. So,
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Fred.
No, I was just going to say I think it's a really good insight.
And I'll leave you guys with this.
His Twitter handle is at RJ in Vegas.
It is. RJ, I was accused of being a racist this week because I didn't enjoy Stephen A. Smith on the UFC coverage.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So your guy Stephen A. Smith gets me in trouble all the time, I got to tell you.
Listen, I just take people on their merit. You know, maybe I'm weird.
Oh, no, you're all right. That is RJ Bell. His Twitter handle is at RJ in Vegas. Give him a follow.
Thanks, guys.
And we'll talk to you next week, RJ.